of natural conception at 45 years old. Fertility stories with meditation teacher Jillian Lavender. Welcome to the Vital Veda Show. I am your host, Dylan Smith. I'm a holistic health educator and Ayurvedic practitioner based in Australia, but works with a lot of people all around the world with fertility and preconception. It's probably the number one thing that I'm treating and working with at the moment, as every day I'm seeing someone either consciously wanting to conceive and prepare their body and optimize their health to optimize the seed of their physiology before planting that seed in order to create a new human, or, which is increasingly becoming more common, is people in my clinic with fertility issues or fertility problems or struggling to conceive. And for this reason, I've created a podcast series within the Vital Veda podcast, Intertwined Within, on just hearing stories. It's really, the intention is for it to be a story time and with different people from different interesting fertility journeys, and it's also inspiring journeys. And today we have someone very dear to me and someone very inspiring in many ways, Jillian Lavender, who I've known for quite some time. She's taught thousands of people to meditate since 2003, along with her partner, Michael Miller. They have taught meditation on every continent on Earth, including Antarctica. Jillian's originally from New Zealand. She's held senior business roles in Sydney, Paris, New York. She was CEO. She was working in corporate in a very high demanding operative way. But due to these high demands, she learned Vedic meditation. And then the improvements in her life were immediate. Her stress levels began to dissolve and fatigue subsided. And she began to desire to have a child, away from this kind of go, 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 focused on work that slowly began to come. And she left her CEO role, trained to become a meditation teacher, met her current partner, Michael, and founded London Meditation Center and New York Meditation Center, and eventually founded Space and Charm to bring into the earth a child. But it wasn't that easy. With plenty of trips to India with intensive Ayurvedic therapies, Jillian tried for 6 years before naturally conceiving and giving birth to her now healthy 10-year-old daughter, Loey. And at the time she gave birth, she was 45. So along side teaching meditation, Jillian speaks to groups about stress, well-being, the impact of becoming more mindful in their daily lives. She's also highly knowledgeable in Ayurveda, which we'll speak about, and consults with people regarding Ayurveda health, diet, sleep, fertility, lifestyle. Her first book was a recent one, Why Meditate? Because It Works. And that's received praise from various media outlets. One of the reasons I wanted Jillian to speak is because of course, natural conception, 45 years old. And I specifically work with quite a decent number of clients and patients in their wanting to conceive late 30s and even in the early 40s. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you do, share it. It's very special because just basically the first time Jillian's opened up publicly about this story, about her personal story, which is of course very personal to her in different ways. And for more information, you can check out other episodes on the Vital Veda podcast on fertility. We've had another fertility story by Tam Oblowitz, who was trying for 1.5 years, but it was a big lesson of trust and surrender. And we've got plenty of podcast episodes, a good handful, on the topics of fertility and preconception and reproductive health. So have a scroll through, check those out. If you appreciate this, share with a friend, leave a review on iTunes. Share it on Instagram story. Let me know what you think. Did you take something from this? Has something helped you on the journey? Has it been one other hearing it again, which helps you? Because this is a lot about what we talk about here is the mind and acting from the heart. So hope you enjoy this episode. Much love. Hey, Jillian.
Hey, Dylan.
Have you listened to the Vital Veda podcast before?
I have okay. A while ago.
So you may have listened to before I've implemented a question that I ask every guest as the first question. That question is, what did you do this morning? What's your daily routine?
Oh, my daily routine is that I wake up early. And that by 5:30 a.m., this morning it was about 10 past 5, I just wake up naturally. I'm based in London, so we're going into the quieter winter months here, so it's very dark in the morning. But I got up and I did my morning, sort of brushed my teeth and scraped my tongue and had some sipped some warm water, and then I sat back up in bed and I, having sort of splashed some water on my face, and I meditated. And I did my morning meditation. Actually lay down a little bit afterwards, not for long, because I knew I was doing this podcast. And then, you know, sort of the house wakes up. Michael was also meditating, my partner, who's also a teacher. And then Loie surfaced, our daughter. And then things sort of kicked off from there, getting her ready for school. And I haven't eaten. I don't tend to eat early. So I've just had some hot water and got them out the door. They went off for breakfast together.
Beautiful.
And got her off to school, and I've been here, just having a little bit of quiet time and doing some work and emails and all of that, and getting ready. I'm teaching this week. I teach Vedic meditation, and I have a lovely course going. So I'm kind of getting ready for that, and that's in the middle of the day. So I'm sort of prepping, and yeah, so that was my morning.
Beautiful. Do you usually meditate in bed, in your bed in the morning?
I do. You know, we live in central London. We don't have a huge apartment, so I always get out of bed and wake up. We always want the jumping off point to be waking state consciousness. But just the way it's set up here, I like that. I kind of hop back into bed. I have the pillows propped up behind me. I have my pashmina, and I like that spot. But I, have been known to meditate in all sorts of crazy places.
Some of the craziest places you've meditated in? What comes to mind?
Sitting on a camel in the Rajasthan desert on like this camel safari, which I don't actually recommend. But I was like, where am I gonna meditate? And we were like going along with these grumpy camels, and I was like, I'm just gonna close my eyes. So it was a bit wobbly. It wasn't a lot of back support.
Yeah, I've definitely meditated on some wobbly. What comes to mind is just the buses in India or up the mountains.
Oh, the buses.
But actually, I have to stop. I've noticed a pattern, and it's happened multiple years, of I actually can't meditate on a windy mountain road. I actually feel sick when I close my eyes. Interestingly, I'm not sure about that.
But. Yeah, I'm the same. I got car sick a lot when I was little, and I think there's still a kind of a legacy from that. I just don't like it. I don't find that to be comfortable at all. Much prefer to be having my eyes open in that moment.
And you've taught, you and your partner, Michael, of course, you founded London Meditation Center and New York Meditation Center. And you've taught, am I right that you've taught meditation in every continent in the world?
Yes, that's true. Yeah, including Antarctica. Yeah.
How was teaching in Antarctica? Was it any different?
Chilly. Well, that was Michael. He went and did a course there for, it was a private course for one of our students who was having his 50th birthday party in Antarctica, as you do. And yes, it was an incredible experience to see people sitting literally on the ice, and there are, icebergs and they have got their eyes closed, and you come out and there's that connection with nature that you have been experiencing so profoundly with the eyes closed, and then to come out and it is there in such, it's so immediate, and it's that sense of bringing that connectivity, that sense of oneness right there to your environment, and it prolongs that experience. And it was very profound for people to integrate what they're experiencing with their eyes closed into their eyes open state with such, because we know, we can have that moment when we are in nature and we watch that sunset, or we have that connection to that wider environment, and there is something transcendent about that. to have that in meditation, and these are new meditators. They were newbies, you know, they'd only had a few meditations, and then they come out and they can hold that experience for a long time because of the environment being so pure and immediate. Yeah, it was a very interesting experience to see that and to hear their experiences. But yes, I've been teaching for 20 years. So, you get around, you take that puja kit and you travel, and I don't go anywhere without it. And I end up teaching in all sorts of places. And that's a great joy.
Hmm. Were you in Antarctica with Michael?
No. Okay. I had to be back here looking after Loey, our daughter.
Mm, yeah, of course. Well, maybe you can relate with other, because I could like so relate to what you were just talking about. We've just moved and my afternoon meditation spot is on a creek with birds, and I feel that it's very immediate. Mm. It's a very, especially different to meditating in the central London, but it's waking, it's opening your eyes to that. And it's almost, to be honest, when I first started coming here, I was like, during my meditation, it was opening and closing. Like, I also wanted to open my eyes, and it was too tempting. Yeah. And I'm sure they experienced that in Antarctica, because it's like, whoo.
Yeah. What you want me to close my eyes when there's all this around me? You know, it's like, although I think that also really highlighted for them that sort of that experience that is within and is available to us and is not environment dependent. And then they come out, and then, well, you know, of course, there was a lot going on, you know, outside and in the world around them. But yeah, pretty amazing.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to get into the juice of this conversation about your conception journey, which I'm really excited and grateful for you to share this. And I know it can be, it's a personal subject, it's a personal experience that you've had, and your partner, Michael, and your daughter, Loey, and everyone else involved. But I think it's so relevant because so many people are, of course, having struggles to conceive, and fertility problems are becoming massive epidemics all around. And as the years go on, of course, people are now conceiving later in life. They're getting married later. They're having partners later. So I would love to hear your story. You conceived at what age?
45.
45 years old. And I'm super interested for your story because I haven't heard much about it, but I do know that you have a long history with my teachers and both of our Ayurvedic doctors, the Raju family in India, and much earlier before my time visiting them. And I've heard you briefly talk about some of the profound, deep experiences, intimate experiences, and I know how they treat fertility, and I'm just sure you, being so a close friend to them and a colleague to them as well, have received some very special treatments, and treatment in the sense of so dynamic, not only physical, but so many in the different relationships you've had. And so we don't have to go into all the details. I know a lot of them people won't understand, and they take long to elaborate on. But I would love to hear about your journey. First of all, why 45? Was it that's only when you wanted, or were you trying for before? Or
yeah, well, you know, let's go back in time, going quite a while, given that I'm, you know, now 56. But you know, I grew up in New Zealand. I didn't come from a family of meditators or, you know, Ayurveda. God, I didn't know what that was. So I grew up in Christchurch, New Zealand, and I went on to the contraceptive pill in my late teens, very early, just as I'm coming up to 20. And I was on the pill for a while, and I had a partner, and how many years was I on the pill? For many, probably about 8 or so, I would say. I moved to Sydney, Australia, and I started working there after I finished university. And I was fortunate in that I didn't have any kind of issues with being on the pill. I found it to be, it didn't have a massive change in my monthly cycle. Everything was pretty normal, pretty healthy. But of course, knowing what I know now, you know, would I have done that? No. But what I knew then, that's what I did. And, you know, having a child, it's a very interesting thing. You know, it was something that at a deep level, if I settled down, I would say, yes, yeah, that's something I want to do, but it wasn't something that I wanted to do immediately. And it was long-term, you know, so I didn't want to get pregnant then, you know, it was all about my career. And prior to being a teacher, full-time teacher of Vedic meditation, I was full steam ahead on my corporate career. And I was doing very well in that, in sort of what you would term as sort of the markers of that. And I was setting up a business in my 20s. It was a global operation. It was a startup. I was really that moving through that process with speed and loving it. And so there was a decision. And I think for women, you know, there's often, you know, it's how do we juggle? How do we balance those kinds of, I want to have a career. I want to make a difference in this environment. I want to succeed. And that's moving along. And yet there is that in that background. Well, yes, at some point I do want a family and I want to experience that. So it was career, you know, and I moved through that, worked in Sydney. I came off the pill. I had various partners. I moved to Paris for work. I moved to London for work. And then I decided to step away from corporate life. And all through this, I was not with anybody that I was like, this is the person I want to make babies with. That wasn't on the agenda. When I was in Sydney, I learned to meditate. I learned Vedic meditation. And if, as you know, and I'm sure many of your listeners know, that's a pivotal moment in your life, because with that expansion of awareness comes the capacity to see things differently and to tune into your body and to really feel things differently. And that was the beginning. That was the absolute fundamentals of my conception journey, actually, because not knowing it explicitly, but that was setting me up for a very different path. And it is fundamental. It is fundamental to me. If someone says to me, well, what did it take for you to conceive Loi at 45? Of course, you know, meditation was the basis. So there I am in my career. I stop, big change. I travel and then I start training to be a Vedic meditation teacher. I moved to Flagstaff. I was training one-on-one with my teacher for a year and a half. And I came out of that. And I went to India, and that's when I met the Raju family, the dear, dear Raju family. And that's when I got introduced to a whole different understanding of what it means to purify every month as a woman. That, you know, sounds so fundamental and kind of obvious perhaps to you and to me now, but the Jillian of old didn't understand the deeper, expansive view of what it means to have your menstruation cycle every month. What is that? And I hear it all the time. You know, it's kind of something to be sort of pushed away or to be suppressed in some way or to get rid of or, you know, to ignore on some level, when actually it's something to really embrace and it's a blessing. You know, I always remember Dr. Raju Senior, Raju G, was a lecture about why do women on average live longer than men. And, you know, his first answer was because they have their period every month. They purify at that profound level in a way that men obviously don't do. And, you know, it was kind of like, what, you know? And so there was this understanding, there was this really big step change in my worldview around myself and my body and what was going on here. So, you know, it changed my whole way that I was taking care of myself, particularly Ayurveda. So that's the second aspect that came in to my life that was fundamental in me conceiving when I did. And we can talk more about that it's a great, great blessing to have learned meditation. It's great good fortune and great good fortune to have met the Raju family, who have a particular specialization in this area of fertility. And they offer treatments that nobody else offers. And it was on that journey that I was able to have the good fortune of receiving treatments like the banana treatment that many people perhaps in Australia have had the good fortune, or some have had the good fortune to receive, or you can go, I was going to India to their clinic and having the Ayurvedic purification treatments of Panchakarma, and I was having the banana treatment that only the Raju family are able to offer. And this is particularly important in terms of balancing the hormonal state and purifying the psychophysiology at that very deep level that no surgical intervention would ever be able to match. So, you know, then that desire, that kernel of a desire that I wanted to be a mother was growing. And, you know, I was teaching meditation and I had met Michael, and that came to the forefront, you know, and it was a journey. It was a journey because, you know, I had had a pretty intense life. I, back in my corporate days, and you and I touched on this the other day, you know, when we were talking prior to recording this, about my life then was really, I spent half of it on a plane. you know how far Sydney is from everywhere. My boss was in Connecticut. The head office was in Malmo, Sweden. It was a global company. It was pretty groovy to get on a plane and go and have a meeting. We didn't have Zoom. We didn't have this kind of thing that you and I are doing now. So I flew a lot. And prior to meditation being in the mix, I know now just how tough that was on my monthly cycle, on my energy, on my balance, on my vata, on my everything. You know, what did that do to my nervous system, along with being on the pill for some time and all of that? And probably, you know, just not understanding really how to take care of myself, particularly at certain times of the month. You know, I would just plow on. I wouldn't stop and rest. I wouldn't eat differently. I wouldn't do all of these things that I learned over time with my growing knowledge of the Vedic knowledge. So, you know, I had a number of miscarriages, but I had the sense that it would happen. But then I got to 45, I'll be honest with you, and I don't tell many people this. I got to 45 and I thought, maybe it's not going to happen. Maybe it's not. And I knew it wasn't going to happen through IVF. That just wasn't my thing. And I know that works for many people, and that's fantastic. It just wasn't something that felt charming for me. It was a personal thing. And I thought, well, if it's not going to happen naturally, maybe it's not. And so I got to 45 and I thought, okay, well, maybe, you know, and this is after me having gone to India and done countless panchakarmas. But, you know, Dr. Krishna and Rajuji always saying to me, yes, yes, this. And I want to come back to a point in a moment just about the mind and all of this. But I kind of let go of it, and then it happened. I was pregnant. At 45, you know, we'd turn up at these doctors, you know, at Chelsea and Westminster Hospital, and they're like, well, how did this happen? And Michael's like, what are you doing about it? You know, because it's, you know, I was in a certain category of, you know, to conceived naturally at that age, that's not happening that often. So that puts you on a whole different track in terms of how they handle you. You know, you're a kind of a high risk kind of mum in that sense. But it's that power of the mind, you know, it's that sense of it's the mind, what are you thinking? And that process of surrender, which is so important in our life. And as you know, as somebody who's trained so closely with the Rajus, it's such an ultimate surrender. You know, you surrender to that knowledge and you surrender to something bigger than you. And for all of us, that's when the real transformation can happen, because we're available for something in a completely different way. And I had to surrender to the timing of this. I had to surrender, you know, I wanted it to happen years before it happened. You know, we'd probably been trying for 6 years. I had to surrender to the when and the, you know, and it happened when it was meant to happen. But I had to let go of that tightness, that grippy kind of angsty feeling every time I then got my period, you know, or it was, you know, people talk about the emotional roller coaster. And I could not have done that without meditation, I don't think, because the mind is so strong, so powerful.
So just for more clarification, what age did you meet Michael?
I met Michael in 2005.
Okay.
And we weren't trying initially.
So you were around 38, 37, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And that's when I was really starting to get into it with the Rajus. And, you know, there was work to do. The hormones were out of balance. My periods were regular. My periods were very, very heavy at certain times prior to sort of starting to work with them.
But so, knowing them, you know, they would be like, okay, here's a 37-year-old woman who's just met a partner. We're going to, first thing on their mind is fertility, because
let's
the Rajas and us in Ayurveda, we want to be bringing more enlightened children in this world. And if someone is coming to us, especially traveling to a clinic in India from the West, they clearly are devoted. And this woman's a meditator, so it's an opportunity to bring an enlightened being in the world. Let's get going.
They don't muck around.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. There's this beautiful balance, as you said, of surrender, which is quite feminine. It's like, and it's very important in Ayurveda in general to surrender to the physician and to not think about your health and especially control it. That's a very masculine thing of control. I want this at this time. But then it's more, okay, let the physician completely take care. I don't even have to think about it. I don't even have to plan. And as you said, Gillian, as the Rajus really operate that way, they'll operate even with controlling people. But when the patient is surrendering to timelines and to treatments, it's such a beautiful thing for everyone, especially me. My experience as well is we were on the journey 1.5 years preconception. We weren't trying, but it because of COVID and things, it was about 1.5 years before we tried. And that was also for me, like we wanted to do it sooner, but it was not even, it's like, really? More time? Like, don't you think we've done enough? But still, it's just that surrender and not have to think about time, not have to plan at all. And fortunately, and I've learned, I wasn't always like this, but I've gotten to a stage where whatever it is, even if it's just general things for my health or general decisions which they're helping me make, if I just leave it to them, it's great. I don't have to, it's not on my mind. I don't have to plan.
Yes, and I think what they're teaching you is the fundamentals of life, as you say, control as opposed to evolution. And what we learn, and I see this, I'm teaching a course of meditation this week. What am I teaching people? I was just talking to them about it yesterday. Let go of control. You know, close the eyes, and whatever happens in that next 20-minute sitting of meditation is not your business. It's nature's business. And yeah. I want to make the point, and I think it's a really something that the Rajus have really taught me. It is not about surrendering control in order to abdicate responsibility to somebody else. It's not that. It is surrendering control, full stop. That's where the sentence ends, because control is very tight and very constrictive, and it doesn't allow for evolution to play out in the smoothest, most graceful, most evolutionary way. And we all are learning how to let go of control. That's the ultimate learning. And so conception and understanding that process, you know, even understanding what conception is about, you know, I thought, okay, you just do the thing and you have a baby and da da da. But, you know, as you've talked about, you know, preparing for that and being in the right state for that, emotionally and physically and hormonally on every level of the psychophysiology. That's a process. And I didn't have that full knowledge. I didn't have that understanding. And clearly I'm a slow learner, but I needed that, you know, and my body needed that. And it's also Michael, you know, he was going and doing Panchakarma. It's not just on the woman, you know, it was him preparing as well. But it's, I really want to make this point. There's this very interesting balance. I'm surrendering and I'm trusting in these people. Ultimately, what I'm doing is I'm trusting in universal intelligence to bring this about in the way that is most evolutionary for me and for everybody around me. And so when Loie came, I was the mother that I was meant to be. And Loie came when she was meant to come. And it was only through me letting go. It was only through me trusting that process. And that took time. That takes time to learn to do that. And you have to have the tools in your toolkit and the people around you and the knowledge to be able to truly do that. Of course, meditation, again, the ultimate. And understanding and connecting with your body and your emotions and what's going on in your physiology, that's, you know, that is a journey. It's a journey. And I think also not beating yourself up. You know, I went through a period of kind of like, oh, why had I done that? And why did I go on the bill? And why did I do this? And why didn't I start earlier? And have I left it too late? You know, you can go down some pretty negating kind of rabbit holes, you know, which again is the power of the mind. You know, it takes you to a place that's absolute rubbish and it gets in the way of you. It's like you're going down the river, but you sort of go off down a little tributary and you're like, oh, no, no, come back, get back in the river and go with the flow here and pay attention. But you go down one of those dark sort of tributaries and it's like, geez, this is not good, you know? And you kind of you come back and then off you go. And I did that many times, you know? And there again, we know consciousness, you know, conceives the body, consciousness constructs the body, consciousness governs the body. So coming back to consciousness was my ultimate guide, and then the great good fortune of having people around me, Raju's principally, but many, to give me that wisdom. And I had to surrender. It was a big lesson for me, an ultimate lesson, I think, in letting go of control.
So 5-6 years of trying, obviously a lot of, I would imagine, assumes a lot of dark moments of like, was that right? Like, were there a lot of, oh my God, is this even worth it? I mean, was that happening a lot? Or
as you know, going and doing Panchakarma is not a walk in the park. You know, it's that process of going, and the environment that you're in is also testing. It's testing one's deserving power, perhaps, or one's level of readiness, one's level of unbending intent. It's a very fine line, I found. I have this intent. I have this vision. And I have not told many people this, but I did at one moment, and this might sound a little bit wacky for some, but I remember very clearly having this very clear, one could say, vision. It was more than a thought. It was something I could see in the broadest sense of me sitting on a sofa breastfeeding a baby girl.
Wow.
I had it many years prior, sitting on a sofa breastfeeding my baby. And I held that. I didn't tell anybody that. But then there I was in this process of going to India and having this Panchakarma, sitting in a tub of herbalized warm blooming ghee or something, like, for, you know, an hour or something. I'm like, you want me to do what? You know, like, and all of these incredible herbs and all of this stuff that I was doing. But actually, you know, I say that, you want me to do what? But I actually didn't question it. I just did it. you know, I sat in the tub and I did it every day for 28 days or whatever I had to do. No question. I had this sense that for whatever reason, this was what I was meant to be doing. But there were moments like, you know, is this going to happen? And as I say, I got to a point where I was like, maybe not. Maybe it's not.
Especially after you tried and then you didn't and you got your
period. Yeah, yeah. And I was having my miscarriages they were very early. I would miscarriage and then boom, it would, you know. And there was that sense of understanding and trusting from the Ayurvedic perspective that a miscarriage is nature's way of saying that this wasn't meant to be. Something wasn't ready. Something wasn't right. And you can understand that on an intellectual level, but when it happens, it's different.
Yeah.
It's a really emotional, on every level, it's just such an intense thing whenever it happens. And that was a real... That was a real growth moment for me as a woman and as a human being and as walking the talk. You know, I teach people how to let go of control. I had to really learn that in a very deep way and through that process. And perhaps that was part of it too. Perhaps that enables me to be the person I am today so I can offer that wise and trusted counsel. As I do in my work today, I do a lot of work with people on this whole fertility journey from my perspective as a Vedic meditation teacher, but also as somebody who's been through it. And maybe that's part of it. You know, we can never know in the moment why something. We need to step back and get that wide angle lens and you know, now sitting here talking to you and why are we having this conversation and really talking about this in a personal way that I don't open up to, you know, to everybody. It's why? What's that about? Why did Jillian go through that? What was that experience about? Well, because there's something there that needs to be shared and there was something for my personal growth. And it was because Loie was meant to come when she came. You know, and I know all that now in a different way. But when you're in it, you know, you got to dig deep to be able to step back because you can get pulled in and you can get sucked into the micro. And that's a really uncomfortable place to be.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you're talking about the miscarriages, I can't empathize to that level. But with my clients, and I'm sure it happened with you, when you miscarriage, of course, there's what happens, but also you need to purify and regenerate. It's not like you can try again next month. It's usually at least 3 to 6 months. We have to purify, remove that memory. It's like, oh, now I have extra work to do. That's how I feel with my clients. It's like, oh, now I got to kind of do even more before I can do it again.
Yeah. You know, and you have to build up that nourishment in the placenta and all of that area in particular. And it's really about, you know, that revitalization and nourishment. It taught me so much and it certainly was a fast track in terms of Ayurveda. You know, I really was able to understand the power of that through living it. And the kind of the roller coaster that I was on. And so in that sense, I know, again, that was meant to be in that way because I learned so much. I was, you know, I would go to India and I would be there. I was at a stage in my life where I could do that, but I could be there for 3 months and really surrender in a different way and really immerse myself. And I know that's not possible for everybody. And it's not that I'm saying that that's necessarily necessary for everyone, but part of what that was about, I can see now, is so that I can become more knowledgeable in this area so that I can help other people. In my role as a teacher, that's part of it as well. So again, you know, there's so many layers to this, so many layers.
I have a question about the perseverance, because obviously over the 5-6 years, there's that balance of perseverance, doing what you got to do, doing what the doctor told you to do, the Vaidya.
Yeah.
And doing, I'm sure as well for you with your age, you'd have been doing a lot. You were receiving a lot of panchakarmas, a lot of banana treatments, and a lot of at-home programs. How would you find that balance of doing that, but without that kind of masculine kind of control of, okay, I got to really do it and then conceive at this date, it's ovulation time, let's do it this day.
Like, yeah, you know, I was tracking my, every day I was taking my temperature and I was really getting in tune with my body and the cervical fluid, and I was really, it was such a growth, you know, of understanding of who I was on so many levels. I was taking the Rasayanas, I was taking I was absolutely on it with taking all of my Ayurvedic herbs that were prescribed. Of course, I was doing long meditation programs as a teacher. I was initiating, you know, I was teaching people to meditate. I was eating, put a lot of attention on my diet. I was, you know, committed. and you're right. I think this, having the unbending intent without being grippy and controlling is a really, it's that is the key learning. So I had this sense of the goal, and what I had to learn, and I got this message driven home to me every month because I had my cycle, was letting go of the how and the when. You know, and so it was a very interesting learning experience because it was happening regularly that, okay, no, not now, not this month, not in this timing, you know, not in this place. It was, and yet holding the goal and holding that in that deep level, and then there's a surrender. What am I surrendering? I'm not surrendering the goal, but I'm surrendering the when. And I'm surrendering how it's going to happen. And that's that schism, that sort of difference is really the subtle challenge with that. And that's the learning. It's good to have goals. It's good to have that unbending intent. But how do you step back from that point of being so rigidly attached that you are actually getting in your own way? And this is the stuff of life. We have to be able to let go of the how and the when. Those are the things, mainly the when, because we get very, very grippy and tight with time. And of course, you know, I could feel it every month. And I was not, you know, 25. So for me, it felt the time thing was amplified because of my age. And, you know, what I didn't do is I didn't read anything about what happens to women's, you know, egg production or whatever over the age of 35. I didn't put any of that into my consciousness. I only put the stuff that I knew that was going to be nourishing for me. I was not interested in that. But if you did kind of go down that track, you know, all you get in that environment is, oh my God, time is ticking, time is ticking, you know. And what happens then? More control, and everything speeds up, and the heart rate's up, and the blood, everything's up and racy and excitatory biochemistry in your body. Everything is racing, but the complete opposite of what we need. I see it in my work now. You know, I'll have women come to me. They've tried IVF. I have one woman I'm thinking of. She's tried IVF 8 times. And it's becoming more desperate, more desperate. And then she came and she learned to meditate and she'd stopped. She gave up on the IVF 3 months later.
Amazing.
And that she puts that down to meditation, of course. She wasn't so into the, you know, you're doing anything specific around the Ayurveda, but just that she'd got to a point where she had to let go of the IVF. It wasn't. And then there was another level of just surrendering all of that tightness and that control and that and that imbalance in the system, let go, let go, let go, and surrender, surrender at that deepest level. And then, okay, nature says, now we're ready.
Which is ultimately going to manifest as a younger reproductive age. So the biology is expressing itself as
a younger. And I held that for myself, you know, sure, because we think about age in such a limited way, you know. Yes, I can say I've had 56 birthdays. Mm. How old am I? How old is Jillian? Mm. Well, you know, I remember that when I was going through the whole medicalized sort of track of having a baby in the center of London here, you know, which I was, you know, trying to navigate very sort of, you know, carefully. You are in this high risk category, you know. I couldn't say to these doctors, you know, it's okay. You know, I'm not a normal, honestly, I'm not a normal 45. You know, like I've been meditating for 20 something years, you know. Mm. I knew in myself, it's fine. It's fine. It's going to be okay. Because I knew myself. And there was that, you know, deeply ingrained sense, well, you've had this many birthdays and time is a ticking. And certainly prior to conceiving, that was amplified for me. And, you know, with the Rajus, as you intimated, you know, they kind of have that orientation as well. So there was a bit of that, you know, going on with me. I, you know, they were saying, like, let's get moving with this, you know, time is a ticking. So that is there. But, you know, ultimately, at some level, we're time billionaires. Life is long. And yet, you know, don't muck around. Don't waste your time, you know. Time is your most precious resource. And that's a balance. How do I hold that at the same time? Mm. Okay, I've got time. I don't want to control my way through this. And yeah, I don't want to waste my time. You know, that's an interesting kind of learning just in itself.
Beautiful. So I think that's great. I think that's the key insight and key takeaway from this interview is essentially, to sum it up in a short way, is just letting go and surrender. And how do you do that? Well, I think the main ways you've said today is meditation, number one. And there's so many lessons within that, which naturally just comes about. You don't have to try surrender or try let go. It just naturally happens. Mm. And of course, having a supportive physicians and supportive community and whoever you're working with on this journey that can help you remind.
Yeah. And I think also the thing that I would add is I think the ultimate is to know yourself and trust yourself and to be able to tune in at that level. Because we live in a world where there's so much information coming at us, some of it really crappy, and you've really got to kind of find that place of trust and find those wise people and those people who are not carrying a lot of stress in their nervous system. And they're few and far between. And so that requires you to de-excite. It requires you to really tune into your intuition and to have the tools in your toolkit that allow you to come back to yourself. And you are your ultimate guide. And no matter what anybody else is saying, you have to trust your connection to the universal aspect of yourself, that bigger self. And that is so fundamental. And that was what, for me, was so profound in my journey. What it was teaching me was to really trust not only in my individualized self, but my universal aspect and trust myself. I had the great good fortune of having wise and trusted counsel, and I had my meditation, but that was the ultimate tool. Come back to who you are, because there's a lot of rubbish out there. There's a lot of stuff that's going to come at you. How do you pass all that out and stay true to yourself and know yourself in the midst of all of that kind of stuff that's out there and that noise?
I so appreciate that. I'm so glad you mentioned it. I was going to say, just through life experience as well, and that's what you get. When I mean life experience, it is that self-referral. How strong is that? And it just continues. And I love how you mentioned that, because especially in this industry, in the preconception, if you're going through various practitioners and doctors and IVF clinics, and as well the birthing industry. And then that's so important to just listen to your
And heart. even dare I say it, the Ayurvedic industry, you know, that with even in, if you go down and we drill down even more, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there called Ayurveda that ain't Ayurveda, you know. So it's even at that level when you're kind of getting closer and closer, but still it's very murky, you know. So ultimately I come back to, you know, trust thyself and don't read too much about from you know, who wrote that book. Are they enlightened? Are they happy? Are they carrying a lot of stress in their nervous system? You know, certainly once you have a baby and, you know, there's how many books are there out in the market about what to do with your baby and your toddler and your I'm like, I know there's thousands and thousands. And what do you need? You need to trust yourself and your connection with your mind and your body and your baby. And, you know, half of these books, are more than half, are written by stressy, controlling people, you know? Like, what's that going to do for you?
Oh, beautiful. It's really valuable. I think it's really valuable for people. So to end off, if people want to learn more about you, you speak a lot, but you teach meditation in New York and London. Mm-hmm. So London Meditation Center, New York Meditation Center. London Meditation Center also hosts the Rajus basically once a year or so, or regularly. Yeah, so if you want to experience Ayurvedic treatment and banana treatment through them, you can do that through London Meditation Center. Definitely worth signing up to the newsletter to be informed about that, because it's a rare.
Absolutely. Reach out to me through londonmeditationcenter.com. Go to the website and send me a message and say, you know, I've heard this and I just want to stay in touch. On there, you'll see my book, Why Meditate? Because It Works.
I was going to ask about that. Tell us about how that went, because I saw that released, what was it, 2021, I think, a couple of years ago?
21, July 21. That I was approached by the publisher just prior to the pandemic. And so then lockdown happened and I wasn't teaching because, as you know, we can only teach Vedic meditation in person. We were doing a lot with our community online, but not teaching online as we never do. And so it created some space for me amongst homeschooling, Loie, to be able to write. And it came out very quickly. And it's something I had wanted to do for a long time, but, you know, the timing wasn't supporting that because, you know, I had a baby and all of that. But it's been wonderful. It's been a wonderful experience. And the report, you know, we have so many people coming to learn having read the book, because there are so many things, as you know, there's so many different types of things out there called meditation that are not meditation, you know. So this is very much a why meditate. You can't obviously read this book and learn how, but it was really about why are we going to sit around with our eyes closed and what does that actually mean and what are the benefits and how is this going to impact our stress and, you know, our creativity and our aging and sleep and all of these things. And I've done it very purposely. It was a very interesting experience because I did it with all women that supported me, who were all meditators. So the cover designer, the illustrator, you know, the woman who my publisher learned to meditate. You know, it was just this fantastic kind of project that everybody was sort of on that level with. And I think that kind of shows through a little bit and what has come out. So meditators love it, and non-meditators are really finding it, I think, quite helpful. Lovely. So yeah, there's that, and there's a number of talks that I've done, one recently that maybe I can send you the link for that and then you can share which has been more of a broader sense around experiencing being and then moving out into action, which I think is so important. But yeah, londonmeditationcenter.com, find me there.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Gillian.
Such a pleasure, Dylan. Thank you for all of your work and all of this, you know, these deep dives and these sharing and making this so relatable and personal. We need more of this in the world.
Thank you for opening up. I know it's very special. And yeah, it's a It requires us to dig something a bit deep, go a bit deeper in our heart to have a conversation like this. So personal. So thank you.
Yeah, such a pleasure. Jay Gurudev.
I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you're inspired. I hope it supports you on your journey, or if you're helping others on their journey. It is extremely common, and I guarantee you, you know someone or will know someone, if it's not yourself, struggling to conceive. So share that with friends, share this podcast around. I really appreciate that. Leave a review, subscribe, check out the other podcasts we have on fertility and other fertility stories. More will be coming from all walks of life, different little nuggets of wisdom and inspiration. If you want to book a health consultation with myself, where really we're working more and more with fertility more than ever, you can visit vitalveda.com.au/bookings. Until next time. Much love.